Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. You know, I'm looking toward spring.
Well, my goodness, it's February. I can't believe we're into February already, and I was a little bit jarred because earlier this week, you know, you go to the store and you see the Valentine's candy, and that's what you expect. Well, sprinkled in with the Valentine's candy was some of the Easter candy already. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
What is wrong with these people?
Let us
enjoy the seasons as they come.
I know it.
You know? I mean, we've had snow, we've had everything else in this week. We've had tornadoes in the area, we've had storms, a lot of rain. You know, you would think it was spring with Amari starting to have tornadoes and bad weather.
I know it. It's like way too early. I mean, late January, early February, this is not tornado season. It's almost like you've got like all four seasons in like a week and a half. It's really strange.
That's what I'm worried about. The seasons don't know what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. It's
I think they've got amnesia.
Of course, maybe I'm confused. It makes you wonder your own sanity.
That's right. Who is confused here? Me or you? Right.
Yeah. It's so bizarre. But yeah.
And, you know, the weather was so cold, and we've had such cold mornings even this week. And they tell me, you know, it's going to get up to 60. I'm waiting to see that.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to see 60 degrees.
Yeah, especially coming out of, you know, like 30s or sometimes 20s or a couple of weeks ago. It was, you know, in single digits in some areas. And so, my goodness, it's too extreme, too fast. I don't remember anything ever like this. And it seems like each year we say the same thing. It's like, oh, this is kind of strange. It's extreme. It's weird. But it seems like it's just getting weirder and more extreme.
It seems like the weather's changing. It doesn't know what it's supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
You know, we have storms in April and spring.
Yeah.
And we don't have them in the winter. But yet we've had tornadoes in Oklahoma and here in November, December.
Yeah.
So something's going on.
Yeah. Something is changing, that's for sure. I saw something, and I don't even know if it was real or where it was or what it was, but I saw something about somehow the polar north or something like that, the magnetic field or something is changing, and it's moving like it's like where the North Pole is where it should be. It's
the North Pole is changing.
Yeah, it's now like
wow.
Down a little
Do
bit.
Do the bears know that?
I don't know.
I mean, we need an alert there, a bear alert.
That's funny. Somebody needs to tell Santa too while we're at it.
That's right. I mean, I don't want to leave him out.
Oh my word!
You know, if the ice and snow melts. I know we need to put an alert out.
Yeah. Yeah. But before you know it, it's going to be so warm in the winter and cold in the summer. We'll be spending like Christmas in our shorts and flip-flops, and then July 4th we'll be bundled up in parkas. We're headed that
way. You need
to
tell the people in Montana that. You know, it's pretty cold in Minnesota and Montana.
Wow. We'll have to have a summer home up north where it's warm.
There you go.
Wow. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
Now, I've come to understand that there's some exciting, fun, great news from this week. So should we get right
That's
to
right.
it?
That's right. The annuity companies are right on it. You know, we thought for a while they were going to put our bonuses down. Well, not only have they not put them down and stayed with us, they've raised the bonus.
Really?
So now, whatever money you put in this annuity first year, you get 14% bonus. 14%,
really?
It's unheard of. And that's beside what it makes that year. Then if you put any money in it the second and third year, you get another 14% each year.
Gee.
So that's in addition to what it makes. And this is a company that's a AA rated company, A-plus rated. Been in business 100 years.
Wow.
They know what they're doing. They do a good job. People make good returns with them. It's good for IRAs. It's good for a retirement account. It's good for a joint account, a children's account. There isn't anything that doesn't work on annuities.
Yeah.
That's what I love about annuities.
And
I love the fact that it has a loss stopgap, where that if everything goes down, yours does not go down. If the market goes down, it just stays the same. If the market goes up, this matches it, goes right up also. So the upside is always great. And you don't pay any taxes. It's all tax deferred to you to start taking it out. How many investments are tax deferred?
Wow. Not many. Not that I can think of.
Not that I know of, anyway. Not very many. So it is tax deferred. As I said, it's good for an IRA. It's good for a joint account or a single account. So there's just not any bad idea, I think, when it comes to annuities, as long as you get a fixed index annuity. I would not do a variable annuity because it is got mutual funds in it.
Yeah.
And you have to be a little more careful that way.
Wow. I think I'm surprised to hear it. I know that we've been saying for a long time that, you know, annuities just seem to be getting better and better and better. But it seemed like there was rumors towards the end of last year that maybe the bonuses would maybe go away. But not only did they not go away, but now all of a sudden they've just gotten better.
That's right. And we thought we were going to lose the bonus when the economy was starting to get tanking. And, you know, they were saying, you know, you may have to not have a bonus. And that's what we were afraid of, that we wouldn't have one to give. And then they held the line. And not only did they hold the line, you know, then they came up with the 1%. And then the fixed annuities for the people that like, you know, just a fixed rate. Those are over 5% for 5 years.
Really?
You can do a 3-year, you can do a 5-year. They're over 5% now.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's not any bad news. It's just all good news.
Wow. And annuities don't really require a whole lot. It's pretty much you set it and forget it. You don't really have to worry about, you know, really anything. You don't have to, it takes no maintenance. You don't have to worry, you don't have to get up in the night and think, oh gosh, do I have anything left because of that stopgap? And so I can't really think of anything that is not
just
great.
There's not anything negative about a good annuity.
Yeah.
And as long as you get the right company, I think you're going to do good. You know, people have had annuities with me for, you know, 20 years. And, you know, I've never had anybody say, you know, I don't like annuities or, you know, I want to switch out. You know, I've never had that happen. They love their annuities.
Wow.
And there's just so many good features about an annuity. You know, whoever you want to have it, you put it down as your beneficiary, and that's the way it works.
Yeah.
And it's not like other things. You know, you don't have to go through probate. You don't have to have any fights with the family about who gets what. If you've got annuity, it's yours. Whatever. If you're the beneficiary, you can cash it or you can leave it.
And that beneficiary, now, that's set in stone, right? That can't be contested.
It's set in stone. And nobody can change that but you. So the beneficiaries, whoever they are, they're going to get it. If you've got them listed. If you don't, they don't get anything. It's just real simple.
And then on the other hand, if say, because people have falling outs all the time. So if you set it as somebody and then all of a sudden, you know, like the way that they're acting or whatever, you can go ahead and change that, though, right? It's not permanent. It's just it just can't be contested.
That's right. It cannot be contested.
Right.
Annuities, you know, have made an average of 10% all these years.
Wow.
I went back and looked at what, you know, what they'd paid out, and the average is 10. Some years it paid a lot more, some years a lot less, but it averaged out that, and that's a good average.
Wow,
and, you know, people that just want steady income, steady returns, that's what an annuity's for. And I think it's one of the best investments. Like you said, you don't have to get up every day and check. You don't have to worry about it. Every 12 months, whatever it's made, it locks it in. That interest is locked in. It's yours. And you can take 10% a year out after the first year. And a lot of people don't take anything for several years. But if they need the money, if we've got their retirement in this, they can start taking out money. And a lot of people don't even want to take 10. I had a guy this last year said, Faye, I don't need that much. He said, I only need $20,000 a year to
really?
Take out.
Wow.
And so, you know, he had other income or else he was living pretty frugal.
Well, you know, and the great thing is I guess if you like the excitement of the stock market, your annuity will go up. But if you don't like the risk of the stock market, you don't have to worry about it pancaking. So if the market was to crash, say, on Monday, if you had an annuity like these, like the fixed annuities that we're talking about, you don't have to worry about losing everything. You protect your principal that way. So.
That's right. Your principal is always protected. That principal is safe. That's what I love about annuities. The principal's not going to go up and down. Hmm. And, you know, it's just steady as you go. So that and you don't have to have the qualifications that you do in a life settlement. As you know, a life settlement, you've got to either make $200,000 a year or you must be worth $1 million, and that's without your house. So the qualifications are a lot higher. The standard of the government is a lot higher. So when you go into an annuity, you've got to be qualified. And if you're not, they won't let, you know, annuity, you don't have to have all these qualifications. But with a life settlement, you do.
Yeah. I mean, they check they look at your stuff, I guess, you know, to your balances, what's in, what's out, you know, all these things. But it's not quite as, is it fair to say it's not anywhere near as strict as a life settlement?
It's not near as stressful. The requirements are not the same. In other words, you have to have money for emergencies. They require that. You have to have money to live on. Where that you wouldn't have to take this out the next day. They don't want someone to put money in an annuity. And the next month they call them, oh, we've got to have all that money. We don't have any money. They would never do that. So you have to be comfortable like you are. And when you go into a life settlement, the requirements are tough because they want qualified investors. If you're not a qualified investor, you can't do a life settlement. The way a life settlement works, you open an account with Nevada Trust. They are the trustee. They handle your money. And they're doing a great job, by the way. They're a great company. They've won all these awards there in Nevada for the way they handle their business. Been there a long time.
Yeah.
So, and we can talk to them. It's not like these banks. Every time I try to call somebody, I get a recording. You'll do better if you just go online.
Yeah.
In other words, get off the phone. We're not going to talk to you. Basically what they're telling me.
Pretty much. We don't want to pay somebody to answer the phone.
No, they don't want to do it. Big companies don't do that. They have a recording for everything. But when you're doing a life settlement, you're investing in a life insurance policy on someone that has cancer. It has to be terminal, has to be stage 4, or we're not going to do it. When we started out years ago, we did a lot of other types. And a lot of those, you know, were slow coming in. They weren't as they were supposed to be. But cancer policies is a great investment. We've done really well on them. We've returned a lot of money.
Yeah, you have. And it seems like... it just keeps getting better and better. It seems like, you know, it's always been a great investment to begin with. It was always solid. It's always been conservative. It's always been well-informed. But it just seems like as we go through time, the data information that you have on each policy just keeps getting more accurate and better and better.
It is a lot better. Since 19, I think it's gotten a lot better. We've got shorter LAs. They're coming in on time. They're coming in early. That's what we want. I want them to come in early, if at all possible. When they say 14 months, I hope it's 6 months, you know? And we've had several come in lately that was supposed to be like 2 years. And in 12 months, you know, they passed away. So we're getting better results. Lapidus is a great company that does our LAs. I love Lapidus. Sometimes we get others, but they are the premier company to do this. And these are all scientists, so they know their job, and they're a lot better than most people.
with a life settlement, I know that for investors that come in, maybe haven't done something like this before, is there a, I guess, to get into a policy, and it kind of has to depend on what's available. I know there's always policies that you're bidding on. There's always, you know, things that are happening. Doesn't mean that you even bid on all of them just because they're available. They may not be what you're looking for. But it does kind of depend on availability. So is it a kind of a thing where it may take maybe a couple of weeks until the new policy comes in before you can get
yes,
in?
Yes, and sometimes we have them that renege on the deal. Mm. They'll sign a contract, and they have 15 days to say no. So after we raise the money, we're ready to go to escrow, or we may already be in escrow. They have 15 days to call it back, and we have to give everybody their money back in their account if this happens. And we've had it happen more this year than we've ever had happen. People don't know their minds. You know, they'll say, we want to sell our policy. You know, that one, the Bidner policy, you know, that we thought we had the other day. The guy wanted to sell his wife's policy. She had about 12 months left to live. And we thought, well, that's strange, you know, because he didn't have long. I mean, he could wait that long. No. He wanted to do this other, and the wife wouldn't sign the papers. And,
really?
Yeah. You know, it's her life. It's her life insurance policy, and he thought he had all this done, and she wouldn't sign.
Wow. I wonder what kind of conversations they had.
That's right. I mean, they had some tough conversations if you want to know the truth.
Wow.
That's what I think happened. But, yeah, we have people that, they'll sign a contract, then they go shop the policy.
Really?
They're not sophisticated people. These are ordinary Americans, but they're not real bright.
Well, how is that even possible?
Well, it happens, and it's just happened lately.
Oh, wow.
Used to, it never happened. If they signed the contract, we did the transfer of ownership, everything. They signed the documents. The legal department got it done. We sent it to Nevada Trust, and it was over. We owned it, you know, and that wasn't any problem. But people are just—they're just not quite right.
Is it a?
You know, they're doing strange things.
Yeah, they are. It seems like over the years, we've heard, you know, that sometimes the broker will try to play games so that they can get more of a commission or more of a fee out of it. And sometimes the policy owner doesn't actually know. Sometimes they do, but sometimes they don't. Do you think this is a broker game, or is it a policyholder game?
Sometimes it is. Sometimes the broker will say, oh, you've got to go up. And I need an extra 10 or an extra 20,000.
Yeah.
You know, I can get you that, but it's going to cost you. And they do all kinds of things. Brokers are notorious for having their own interest out front of the policyholder.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes at the expense of the policyholder.
That's right. And remember, this has gotten big business. It is huge. I mean, your mutual funds are doing it. They've got involved. And they don't know a thing about life settlements, but they're involved in it heavily. And, you know, we have rules. We're not going to do one that's 40 months. We're not going to do someone that's 80 years old. And they'll send us anything, you know. They'll send us somebody that's 80 or 90.
Oh,
we know all about 90-year-olds. We don't need the experience. You know, we've had enough experience with those. And they have all other diseases, and lots of times they'll try to get us to do another disease. And if it's something that is not quick, we're not going to do it, because cancer is the one that we know. We know cancer. We've been doing it a long time. We know which ones come faster and which ones are really deadly. So, you know, we try to stick with what we know.
Yeah. And some of these companies that have come in and started to, I guess, kind of get in on this, it doesn't sound like they are very focused, very experienced. They kind of bid on still just kind of anything.
They'll pay
really
anything.
Ugh.
I mean, we'll have a really good bid in, and a mutual fund company will come in and bid over that.
Really?
And we're going, where is their profit? Where is their profit?
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't even understand how much they have to make to pay the premium on this thing. Because, see, they're going to pay the premium. They're buying the policy for the mutual fund. But they're the ones that have to pay all the expenses till it matures.
Yeah. I would think.
Sometimes I don't think they understand that part.
It seems like simple math. It's just like if you overpay, you chop out your profit, and there's nothing left. I don't know why they would even bother bidding on some of these and bidding the outrageous rates that they do. I don't know what they're.
Well, they do because we had bid on a $4 million policy with a company out of California that we use, and we bid all we could bid, and the mutual fund company swooped in and put that finishing bid on it. So, I mean, it happens.
Yeah, well, it's good to know, though, that, you know, even behind the scenes, you know, even when people don't have to worry about sitting there thinking they're going to get an email about a policy that may be a little bit shady, because you filter all those things out. I can't imagine some of the craziness that you actually, like, deal with that people never even know about. Some of the outrageous policies that you see you reject.
Sometimes they'll send us one that says 144 months. I mean, you know, they're going to live in the next century, you know. I don't know if they run out of policies or just think maybe we're asleep at the wheel. You know, we would bid on stuff like that. And, you
wow.
know, the ones, my favorite ones are the 28 months. 28 to 30 months, because they usually come in shorter than that. But I like those. You know, we do a lot of colon cancer, you know, stomach cancer, and, of course, pancreatic when we can get it. That one the other day was pancreatic. We were desperately trying to get it because we know that pancreatic cancer, they can say what they want. It's usually a year, 12 months, 13 months. Those are good policies. We've had good luck with them. And then we've done really, really well with breast cancer.
Mm. Yeah, that's always a popular one.
It is popular because these women will go to Mexico and are going to get all these cures, and all that does is give the cancer time to reevaluate itself and grow more. And I've never seen anyone that survived going to Mexico.
You know, and when you look at those kinds of things, it seems like you're not just, it's one thing to look at, you know, the data and the metrics and all that, but then it's another thing to look at, like, the things that maybe, I don't want to say that aren't written because they are, but you're kind of like reading between the lines. You're looking at, you know, lifestyle and things like that. If they're playing golf, if they're traveling, if they're, you know, doing all these things, that's not a kind of policy that you're going to bid on, no matter what it says otherwise.
No, and you know, why would they send us a policy and they tell me in the middle of the life expectancy how well they're doing?
Yeah.
You know, this person is doing really well with the treatment. I'm going, well, I don't want to hear about that.
Yeah.
They're doing really well. You know, they don't need us.
Yeah. It's great for them, but from an investment standpoint, that's not what you're...
Now, a lot of people just want to sell their life insurance policy.
Yeah.
And if they just want to sell it, we would bid on it. And I'm always hearing what they're giving for those, and they're not sick, and they just want to sell it.
Yeah.
We can do that, too. But most of the time, it's got to be cancer, and it's got to be stage four. And we will buy those policies. People here in Texas, we're licensed. You know, we're a provider. We can buy those policies ourselves, direct. We don't have to go to the brokers. We don't have to go to somebody in California or Florida. So we can buy those ourselves through nobody except us. So you get more money because we've cut out the broker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anytime you can cut out that broker, you're going to get more money.
Yeah, you cut out the middleman, and just going, just based on some of the things that you were saying, you know, before or in the past, you know, brokers want an extra 10 or 20,000. It's just like, wow, on top of what they were already trying to get. And it's just like, you know, those fees that they get are sometimes, you know, outrageous, and the things that they demand and the games that they play to get those are sometimes crazy. And so if you can just cut that out altogether, obviously the policyholder is going to get more, and really everybody.
Yeah, it's going to be a much more profit deal for their side.
Yeah,
for our side, it just cuts out all the things you wouldn't even believe. All the paperwork. I mean, it makes the paperwork really simple if we don't have all the brokers involved in the closing.
Yeah,
because this closing is almost like a real estate closing. Because of all the things that have to be changed.
Oh,
the beneficiary has to be changed. Ownership has to be changed. Sometimes we have to go from term to permanent life insurance. You know, there's just all kinds of paperwork, and it takes 2 or 3 weeks behind the scenes to get all the papers done.
Wow, I can't imagine. When you kind of describe it like that, I'm getting a picture in my head, it like literally going to buy a house in a stack like 4 inches thick of papers that need to be signed. I couldn't imagine
And Nevada Trust has to get involved. They have to accept it. They have to sign off on it. Not only do we sign off on it, but Nevada Trust has to sign off on it. In the legal department of the people that are doing this, the broker, their legal department has to make sure that we have all the sound documentation.
There's
a lot of stuff involved.
I've never thought about all that. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. It looks simple. And from the investor standpoint, it is. They don't have to do all this.
Yeah. I mean, you make it look easy.
That's right.
Boy, oh, boy. I would almost like to see what it's like a day in the life of Faye Bagby, really, just to see what you go through.
Well, I'm talking to either clients, new clients, current clients, or I'm talking to the brokers. I'm talking to somebody about buying a policy. I'm reading life expectancies, you know, the whole deal.
And when you talk about reading life, you're talking sometimes, you know, 700 pages of reports and data and stuff. I mean,
start going through the file, it'll have all their lab work first. Then it'll have, if they had surgery for this type of cancer, it'll tell all about the surgery. If they couldn't do surgery, it'll tell me that. It'll say what they found. It'll say what the prognosis is. Is this person going to survive, or if it's going to be a short trip? And we had someone the other day on an old policy we've had. A woman wants to commit suicide, and somebody asked me, can she do it in that state? Is it allowed? I said, you know, people can do pretty much what they want, whether it's legal or not, if it's something like that.
Wow.
I'd never heard somebody say that before.
I don't know that I've heard
that. That's
what
she said.
Really?
She said she thought she would do that, but she's awful sick and can't help herself.
Wow. Yeah. I've never even heard. I guess there's probably a lot of things that go on behind the scenes that
we don't even hear
about.
And this one, the life expectancy company is the one that told me.
Oh, wow.
They sent me a little note and told me about her.
My goodness. Gracious. So I know we've in the past talked about, it used to be page 14, just not that was the name of it. It's just, that's what number it was in the documentation. But now it's moved. Is that basically a Cliff Notes version of what's in the report, or what is what used to be known as?
It's about 5 pages from the end now, but it gives you all the information you need about this, where you have it. When you sign the contract, first of all, it tells you the insured is, what their age is, what type of cancer it is, what the face amount of the policy is, what your profit is, what your percentage is. Then it tells you if it goes over, what you would have to pay. So everything you need to know to make that investment that we've already told you about is in writing. It's in your contract.
And what about the I want to be careful because I don't want to misspeak here, but what about the escrow? Because I know you escrow, there's some kind of escrow.
We usually escrow 12 months over what it requires. In other words, if it's 24 months, we're not only going to escrow 24, we're going to do 34.
All right.
We always try to escrow an extra 12 months. So we've got you covered. Not only coverage is through the life expectancy, but another 12 months in case it should go over.
Okay.
So we're always trying to protect that investment for you.
So what that means, just in a practical day-to-day sense, what that means is if the policy goes over, you don't send a bill to anybody and says, hey, you need to pay this premium. You just take care of it.
That's right, because it's covered.
Right.
It's covered for a long way out.
Cool.
And that's another thing. You know, before you go into a policy, what your premiums would be if it goes over. One the other day, we sent them a deal, and it was like it was going to be $24 a quarter.
So that's 24 bucks.
Let me tell you, that was a good one.
Now, some.
They're not all that good, let me tell you, but it was. It was one of those that was good.
That's kind of funny. Now, there are some that don't have. Oh, let me turn that into a question instead of a statement. Are there some that don't have any premium?
That's right. Every once in a while, we'll buy a policy with no premiums, and everybody loves it, but they're few and far between. But every once in a while, it'll be paid up. And the other thing sometimes is they're so sick, they got the premiums waived. And we'll buy some policy, all the premium has been waived.
Really?
And if it's been waived, we tell them that also up front. By the way, there's no premium. It's been waived by the policyholder.
I would imagine when you mention that there's no premium, I would imagine those go like hotcakes.
Well, sure they do. And what happens is some policies have that clause that you can generate it if you're sick. So they call on the life insurance company and say, you know, I need to do this. And so then they will do it for them and say, okay, there'll be no more premium the rest of your life.
Does when there's no premium, how does that affect the bidding process? Do people go bid more?
I think they like it to the extent that they'll probably put more money in. They were probably going to do it, but then when they find out there's no premium, what that means is there's no risk whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know, you have no premium risk. So if you have no premium risk, you would probably put in a lot more money on a deal.
So when people are looking at these, or even you're looking at these and deciding whether you're going to even bid on them or not, that is really the thing that is, I guess, the biggest determination is if it goes over, what is the premium? But if you take that out, it doesn't matter if it's 18 months or...
That's right. It doesn't matter. At all. If there's no premium, because that's your biggest risk, is if there's premium.
Yeah. Golly. You know, I guess I never put it into that kind of perspective. I know we talk about it all the time, but I hadn't really put it into that kind of a perspective before. So,
yeah.
Interesting. Okay, let's do a quick compare and contrast before we get into trivia. So, between life settlements and annuities, what types of, and I don't mean to be like stereotyping, but I'm just in people's investment career, what types of investors would go for a life settlement versus an annuity?
The people that are really active, if you're an active investor, if you're an active person, you're going to want to do some life settlements. If you're younger, if you're 60, 65, you're going to do life settlements probably. But if you're 75 to 80, you're going to probably do annuities because you've slowed down on your investing and you just want a safe investment that'll pay you that you don't have to worry about. You don't have to get out and go see a broker every month. It just coasts along and you get paid.
All right. So it's not that either of them take any really significant amount of time involvement. But with an annuity, you can kind of, it sounds like you just set it and then, you know, oh, here's some money. Here you go. And then after another period, oh, here's some money here. Kind of like having a job with your paycheck, sort of.
Well, it's pretty simple. The investment all year long. Goes up and down, and then at the end of the year, it locks in whatever interest you made.
Cool.
Which is really great.
Yeah. And then with the bonuses on top of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you're going to get that 14% bonus this year. Everybody ought to jump in, buy an annuity, and make that 14% plus. So let's say that the fixed rate didn't make but 3 or 4%. You know, you're looking at 19, 20%.
Wow.
First year.
That's incredible.
And if you've got in indexes and it makes the 10%, look what you've made.
Yeah, for literally doing nothing. I mean,
yeah,
nothing. Wow. And you've also got the excitement of the stock market. So if it goes up, it's great. If it stays steady, you have the security of not losing your principal. And so you don't even have to worry about that. It sounds like annuities are just a win-win all the way around.
Well, think about it like this. It's not like real estate where you have tenants where you have to pay taxes, where you have all these other difficulties. I mean, it takes all the difficulties out. You don't have tenants. You don't have real estate to sell. You don't have taxes, and the taxes going up all the time. That's why it's so great. You don't have to deal with all these people and taxes and different things. And, it doesn't matter how young or how old you are. Annuity is simple.
Is there...
You just sit there and let it make money, get a check when you need it, and let it go.
Yeah, kind of like let it simmer.
You can do this up to your 90 years old. Who cares, you know?
Yeah. It's almost like putting a, like making Thanksgiving lunch. You set the, it's like setting the beans on the back burner and just kind of like let them simmer and do their thing. It's
that's
that
right,
easy.
Because it's a simple investment. It's not complicated. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to do this.
Is there still 13, 14 options, something like that?
Yes, there are a lot of options, right. And we've got them down. We know which ones work. We're doing annual or 2 years. You can do a 2-year strategy, or you can do a 1 year. So at the end of the year or the end of 2 years, whichever one you've done, it locks it in. We tell you what you've made, and we do it again.
Okay. And with an annuity, it's a little bit different than a life settlement. For a new investor, they don't have to wait for availability, right? You just come in and...
That's right. They don't have to wait for availability. We can do an annuity on the first day.
Cool. That's fantastic. For people that want to get moving right away, that would be another great option as well. So, and you do people, there's investors that do both. It's not like one or the other, right?
A lot of people do both. I did a gentleman this last week. He was changing jobs. He put his retirement with us, and he did annuities, and he did an IRA with us.
Neat.
He had a reason for doing it that way. So lots of times people have things that they tell me about, personal things that would say, you do need an annuity, or you do need this.
You've always said.
We had somebody that had a child that was a special needs child. And in later years, if they die, somebody has to take care of them. This will give them the money to take care of that child.
Oh, wow. That's brilliant. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Wow.
We do a lot of things for people that nobody even think about.
Yeah, really. I mean, I guess what's kind of neat also that we don't think about very often is that wherever people are in their life and their investment career, they can set these up for anything. You can set up, for situations like that or for college or, people, they can put a thing on there. You can't get some until you're 30 or, until they're 40 or bits and pieces here and there. You can kind of set it up kind of any way you want to. Is that right? Or... Am I misspeaking?
Yes, it's all kinds of options.
All right, cool.
And remember, it's all tax deferred until you start taking it out. And how many investments are that way?
Yeah, really.
Not very many.
Not many at all. It's just annuities just seem to be getting hotter and hotter.
Well, I think they're middle class America. That's what I think.
Nice. Nice way to put it. Yeah, brilliant. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is...
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com. Got a lot of great ideas in it.
And every Saturday around this time, we get into trivia. So what is our topic today?
Well, first I've got to read you the newspaper about it. It's Aurora, Texas. And it's entitled Windmill Demolishes It.
Oh, no.
It was about 6 o'clock in the morning. The early risers of Aurora were astonished at the sudden appearance of the airship, which had been sailing through the country. It was traveling due north and much nearer the earth than ever before. Evidently, some of the machinery was out of order. It was only making a speed of 10 or 12 miles an hour, and it was gradually settling toward the earth. It sailed directly over the public square. It reached the north part of town. It collided with the tower of Judge Proctor's windmill. It went to pieces with a terrific explosion. Scattered debris all over several acres. It wrecked the windmill and the water tank and destroyed the judge's flower garden. The pilot of the ship is supposed to have been the only one on board. And while his remains were badly disfigured, enough of the original, they picked him up to show he was not inheritant of this world. Now, Mr. T.J. Weems, United States service officer at this place, and an authority on astronomy, gives the opinion he was a native of Mars. Papers found on his body, evidently the record of his travels, were written in some unknown script. The ship was too badly wrecked to form any conclusion as its construction. It was built of an unknown material resembling, well, it was either aluminum or silver. It must have weighed several tons. Now, this was in 1897, okay?
Wow.
In Aurora, Texas. They swear that a spaceship landed in Aurora, Texas.
Oh, my word.
It was April 17th, 1897. Most famous incident ever happened. In 1897, the Dallas Morning News wrote about it, and they talked about it. Well, they took all this and they dumped it in a well, and they ended up putting the alien in a grave. And then a guy in the 20s purchased this property. And he said that when he got this water well working again, it gave him extreme arthritis from the water in the well. Well, then along comes, and they put up a marker, to mark this date and everything. Well, then in 1980, Time Magazine interviewed this lady. She's 86 years old. She said it didn't happen. They fabricated this because they needed to bring some people down because the railroad had bypassed them. But it made the papers. Then in April 12, 2020, Monster Talk Live, they did a podcast on it. And, Channel 4, they did a report on it on cable television. Then in 1998, KDFW and the Star Telegram, they talked about it, but they couldn't find conclusive evidence of the extraterrestrial. Well, they named the old guy, Ted. Oh. They named him Ted.
Ted the alien.
The alien has a name. Now, I didn't know it, but they tried to have him dug up to see what he was. And the town did not want that to happen because of the tourists coming there,
Yeah.
So that what they told them in 1972 was unless it was a family member, nobody had the authority to dig him up.
And at that point, you can't claim to be a family member. So
that's right. You don't want to say you're a family member of old Ted.
No.
But can you imagine? So then they put that monument up outside of town, to get people to come. And but it says it's not a true fact that, it's just what somebody thinks happened. So all these years, they've got all the tourists to come because of Ted and wow. Because of the alien. And everybody's investigating, but nobody can prove who Ted was. But they swear that it was extraterrestrial from Mars and it was a true UFO.
So did all the was the actual tower and all that actually like destroyed or
well they went and investigated and they said they found pieces of a windmill, an old windmill. Now somebody else says, oh no, that windmill was built in 1945, but the other people said no, there really was an old windmill there. It was all broken and bent and everything, but they swear it was really there.
Wow.
So we don't know what really happened in 1800s, but something happened because the windmill was tore down by some kind of an engine coming out of the sky. We don't know what it was, but they named him Ted, and they've kept his memory alive all these years because they're a poor country, poor town, and they need the money.
Wow.
And you got to keep those tourists coming.
Yeah, I would imagine that's a big draw. Sure.
It is. It's the only thing they've got going.
Yeah.
And they dramatized this in a film called the Aurora Encounter in 1986.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. It's one of those things that I know it sounds kind of crazy, but I want to go see it myself now. I want to make a road trip.
Yeah. You got to make a road trip and check this out. And now the landowner gave them some pieces of metal that contained aluminum and an unknown element.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's like, now I'm torn. It's just like, there's enough of a hook here that I'm kind of curious. Some of it's a little ridiculous. People have confirmed that it's ridiculous, but there's a few nuggets in there that just kind of make me scratch my head and think, an unknown metal. Well, you can't really manufacture that. You can't make something like that up. How would you know?
And they say the evidence was inconclusive.
Yeah, of course it was.
I guess it is. I mean, you know, and they put up that little monument, you know, to get people to stop and read that, you know. Of course, that lady says, you know, she swears that Judge Proctor never had a windmill, but they found all these pieces out there of metal and aluminum and an unknown substance.
Wow.
And so a lot of people have visited it. You know, they've done all these stories on it, and they've kept it alive. But they said, you know, they could not afford for anyone to exhume that body.
Well, yeah, no, because you pull the, it's like having a magic trick, and all of a sudden you pull back the curtain on the secret, and you can't let that, the mystery is what draws people. I'm hooked.
And there was a little boy back then, his name was Charles Stevens. He was 10. He said he saw the airship trailing smoke as it headed north toward Arroyo. And his dad wouldn't let him go out there. He wanted to go and see, but there was two eyewitnesses, Mary Evans, she was 15. She told how her parents went to the crash, and they forbade her from going.
Really?
And the discovery of the alien body. And that little boy said he had to go do his chores, but the next day he went to town and saw the wreckage of the crash.
He saw it with his own two eyes.
He saw it. He said he saw it. But the railroad had bypassed them. They needed something exciting.
Well, yeah, well, that'll do.
You know, the press printed it. You know, I read you the story. They printed it in 1897 saying that he, you know, he fell to earth. He was going slow, 10 to 12 miles an hour. And crashed into the windmill.
I mean, if it was in the paper, then it must be true.
That's what I was thinking. And they named him Ted.
Yeah, well yeah. Ted.
Gave him a Christian name.
Ted, I'm not sure.
So
I
everybody
would...
needs to drive out to Aurora, Texas, and see where this alien crashed, and they buried him. And then the little deal that says, they don't know if it really happened or not. It's just one of those stories.
I wonder how long they debated what to name him. Because what do you name an alien?
Yeah, what do you name an alien? And they named him a boy name, so they assume it was a boy, you know, Ted.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's I guess, half the battle, determines a boy or a girl.
That's right. And of course... you know, somebody came to town and said, let's exhume the body. Let's find out if it's an alien. And, man, they weren't about to let that happen.
No.
No, you can't exhume a body unless you're a relative. How would Ted have a relative?
Well, yeah, yeah.
If he's from Mars.
Of course, now, some of my relatives, I think, are aliens. So, I mean, it
could... Okay, so yours could be from Mars.
It could be a thing.
But, you know, the newspaper wrote about it the next day after it happened and wrote the story about the windmill. So there must have been a windmill, or surely the newspaper wouldn't have wrote the story about him crashing into the windmill.
Well, yeah, you would think there would be some kind of evidence someplace, you know, that, that could either verify or debunk the story. So they can't make it too outrageous because it can be easily proven. Even back then, I know we didn't have, you know, cell phones and we weren't, you know, videoing everything that, that happened and, you know, and all that. It was much less sophisticated, but still people could go by and check and look and see, was there a windmill? Was there, is there some parts? Is there fragments of something? Is there, you know, any evidence of anything here? So even back then, they had to be somewhat careful, you would think.
That's right. Yeah. And it could have been a guy that knew that the railroad had passed him by and said, you know, I'm going to build this little deal and create a little bit of interest. And it got out of hand.
It got way out of hand.
And he crashed. That's all there is to it.
Wow.
He obviously wasn't from Aurora.
No. Now,
that part I guarantee.
Mars.
They would have caught him if he'd been from Aurora.
Yeah. Yeah, they'd have known. You know, it's... I would love to have been in on the conversations of the town, maybe the council sat by and said, okay, the train doesn't come here anymore, so we need to come up with something to get tourists. Hey, let's have a carnival, or hey, let's make a you know, some kind of a plaything, or let's make a, you know, something, or but no, they went with aliens.
They went with an alien, and he had a machine and flying it 10 miles to 12 miles an hour.
Wow.
But he crashed right into the windmill of the doctor. And and then later, they put all this metal and stuff inside the well.
Wow. I don't know. It's just... It's interesting, and part of me, as crazy as it sounds, wants to go see it.
Well, of course. I mean, how do you think they got all these tourists?
Yeah.
And they talked about that. There was another article, and it said, nearly 120 years after the alleged UFO crash, it's all about aliens.
Yeah. The story has stuck. And so...
and they sell books and paraphernalia there.
Oh, yeah.
Cupcakes. All about aliens.
Yeah.
So they've kept it alive.
Now I'm in. Just even if I know it's not real, even if I know that it's a made-up story, I still want to go because it's kind of fun.
Well, and you know, they have just recently hosted a conference to commemorate the 120 years ago.
It's an official thing.
Yeah. And this one guy, they said he just loved to tell stories. His name was Marvin, and he loved tall tales. So he was just embellished about Ted.
See, now that would have been a better name, Marvin, because I think there was even a cartoon, Marvin the Martian. So that would have made sense, rather than Ted.
Yeah, but he got the name of Ted for some reason.
Ted, or maybe Al, short for alien. Al?
Yeah.
I don't know. Ted, we'll go with Ted. Maybe that's part of the thing, is people scratch their head and go, why is his name Ted? Who knows?
And, of course, they've used radar to try to see if Ned is really in Ned's grave.
Wow.
Oh, man.
I think,
can you imagine way back then? I'm shocked that they would have had a UFO and an alien in the 1800s. Now, you know, in later years, yeah, people were doing it all the time.
Yeah.
But that far back to thought this up, or whoever did, it was a brilliant plan.
Yeah, it really was. You know, I mean, yeah, you're right. You know, now, you know, in recent years, the last 50, 60 years, maybe, we've had, you know, enough technology where people can, you know, fake something like this. But, you know, back in the 1800s, to come up with a mysterious flying machine, I don't know how common that was. And so, I
think it was not very common at all. And it, whoever thought it up, it was a masterpiece.
Yeah, yeah. From that perspective, in that time frame, that sounds like it was kind of rather genius. Because here we are, still talking about it today.
That's what I thought. You know, after all these years, we're still talking about it. So, It lasted a long time.
Yeah. So kudos to them, even for nothing else, just for coming up with a great story, because that's awesome and kind of fun, a little mysterious, but something for everybody, I suppose.
I think so.
Wow. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website's AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
You know, sometimes before the show, I think to myself, okay, what might today's trivia be about? You know, is there a holiday? Something? Ted the Alien was not on my bingo card.
See, nobody would have been expecting me to do an alien story, I guarantee.
No. It's a surprise every Saturday, for sure. Wow. Okay, before we wrap, I know we touched quickly on some of the risks with a life settlement. What, again, let's recap them. What's the first one?
The biggest risk would be your premium. If it goes over, you have to pay premium. So you have to know what the premium is up front, and we always tell you. So you always know what the risk is. The other risk is it is not liquid until it matures.
All right. And one does need to be accredited. I don't
you
know.
You must be accredited to do a life settlement. And to be accredited, you must make $200,000 a year, or you must be worth $1 million without your house. And the minimum investment on that is $100,000.
Okay. And for an annuity, I know we kind of touched a little bit on this as well. The restrictions are not quite as intense.
They're not as strict. You still have to have savings. You still have to have income. And we check all that. As long as that all adds up, you're okay.
Okay. And there really aren't really any risks that we can think of with an annuity, right? It's just kind
of... No, because, you know, your principal's always safe. Your only risk is how much you're going to make.
Yeah. And then with those bonuses, it's just better and better.
And we've got a 14% bonus. I can't stress it enough. If that doesn't get you over, I don't know what would.
Yeah.
Because a 14% bonus plus what it makes that first year, then if you add to it like most people do every year, if it's an IRA especially, you'll get 14% the next year and the next year plus what it makes. So it's a win-win situation on annuities right now.
Yeah, that's just mailbox money, just for
it
nothing.
It is.
So it's just a great opportunity. And to get involved in an annuity, you said you can have people set up pretty quickly if they're not.
Yes, it doesn't take but a few days. And if it's an IRA, you know, we do IRA. If it's a Roth, if it's a 401, we can do a 401 for you. Almost anything.
All right, cool. So for people to either get more information or just to go ahead and get started, they do need to call and make an appointment. So one last time, Faye, what is your phone number?
The phone number is 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.